Ready? Set? Go. Right, the pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze tells us that after Yaakov wakes up from his interaction, from his dream with the angels, so he makes a commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says that everything you're going to give me, Asera Asrenu. I will give a tenth, double English. So that pasuk is quoted sometimes in the context of Maaser Ksavim, about the notion that one should give a minimum of 10% of his money to tzedakah. But it's unlikely that that's actually a diman haTorah. It's more likely that that's a minig or a personal commitment. So whether it really comes from that or is kind of just associated with that is more of an open question. But the Gemara in Ksubis on Daf Nun does quote this pasuk in the context of a opposite concept, which is actually more solidly a din. And that is the upper limit, that whether or not we say there's a insistence on giving 10%, there is a maximum that one is not supposed to give more than 20%. And the Gemara says, Aser Esrenu, we count the 2/10 together, and we count each one by itself, so it still adds up to 10%. The Gemara goes into that. So you get 20%, 1/5. Says the Gemara, "Hamivazvez al yivazvez yosher mechomesh." That somebody who's spending money, vazvez is a little bit of an interesting word to use, since the connotation of squandering. But a person shouldn't spend more than a fifth of his money on tzedakah. The concern apparently being that shema yeoni v'yitzdarich lebrios. That maybe if he does that, he's going to become poor. And then he's going to have to throw himself on the public welfare rolls. He's going to have to take stock himself. There is a whole discussion, they quote from the Ravid Azov and others, that maybe Ephes is actually to be interpreted as a lav, that one should not allow himself to become impoverished. It's interesting that we spoke a couple times, we talk about chesed, I don't remember recently or other times, about a dual track towards chesed, right? That there is the v'halachta b'drachav track and the v'yahavta re'echa kamocha track. The v'yahavta re'echa kamocha is understood by many as meaning you try to help people practically, and v'halachta b'drachav is about creating personalities that are chesed oriented, that are about giving and kindness, like a Kadosh Baruch Hu is rachum v'chanan, etc. And for the most part, both of those goals were accomplished by engaging in chesed. But as I think we've discussed, they're not always the same. Sometimes you might have different conclusions based on one or the other. So this could be such a situation that on the one hand, somebody wants to create a generous personality, so he could think, okay, let me give away all my money, I give away everything I have. That's going to cultivate a divine characteristic of generosity. But it's in opposition to the v'yahavta re'echa kamocha goal, because that is about making sure the world is better off. And if you're going to give away so much that you yourself end up taking from tzedakah, so then it's not going to really be much of a net gain. You're going to end up with less tzedakah in the world because of what you're doing. So maybe we have to be equally concerned, not just that you're giving, but that there is more tzedakah being given. So apparently that's what this Gemara is reflecting, that you could be giving so much that you're going to get to the point where you're going to become, counterproductive towards the goal of tzedakah. That's not recommended. It's not even allowed, apparently. And that becomes, the Gemara says this was a takana that they did in Usha. And then Usha was one of the places where the Sanhedrin ended up. And the Gemara says that Ba'usha, Hiskinu, this was one of the takanas that they made there. So does that mean they never heard of this before? So that's a whole discussion. The Vilna Gaon in his commentary to Peya seems to understand that this was really a din that was around earlier, and that they came and restored it. The Chassam Sofer seems to have the opposite perspective. The Chassam Sofer writes in one of his tshuvas that before this, you would have thought that you have to give away everything, that anybody who could make it from one day to the next, so then he has to give away everything else he has that's tzedakah. And Chazal came and made it more limited, that you only have to give away a maximum of 20%. Rav Osner has a tshuva where he says he finds that comment of the Chassam Sofer very hard to accept. It sounds like it was always the case that there was space given for your savings and for your need to be able to maintain some kind of a buffer. And it's probably an older din, which then Chazal came and codified into law, that you should only have to give a maximum, only be allowed to give really a maximum of a fifth. So that's in relation to tzedakah. There's a whole discussion, also a very controversial topic, with does this extend even after the life of a person? And if a person dies, does he have the right in his will, so to speak, to give away all of his estate to tzedakah, or is there a limit to how much you can give away to tzedakah? What about his heirs? Does he have to worry about how much his heirs are going to get? Does he have the right to take huge chunks of his money and give it to tzedakah? You can understand why that's a controversial topic and why people have strong feelings about on different sides of the equation, but that's the whole story, which is tangentially related to this question. But when a person's alive, so you have this limit of a fifth. And the Ramah in Hilchos Lulav adds that this is not only a concept for tzedakah, but it's true about mitzvahs also, that when it comes to doing positive mitzvahs, so when it comes to mitzvahs, we'll start with that, so one is only obligated to spend a fifth of his money, he's not obligated to spend more than that on doing mitzvahs. And this is an idea you find in Rishonim. The Shita Mekubetzes in Bava Kamma quotes from the Rush that even though you would say that, look, a mitzvah is infinitely valuable, so I should say however much it takes, I should have to spend it. So yes, that's true, coming from the perspective of the mitzvah, but there is this other consideration of Shema Ye'ani V'Yastarech L'Brias. We don't want a person to become a ward of the public, and therefore that is a overwhelming consideration. Rav Farbstein, the Rav Ram Farbstein, the Shirim that are printed in the Sefer Knesses of Ram, so he gets into the whole Lumdus here where he suggests that you see from the Rush that it's not like there's a tircha limit. Sometimes you might think that there's an upper limit to how much tircha you have to undertake in order to perform a mitzvah. The idea here is that it's not about the tircha for the mitzvah, it's about the end result of ending up on the public welfare rolls, that we're told you don't have to put yourself in that position, and you shouldn't put yourself in the position. You shouldn't live your life in a way that's going to get you there. So that's why we have this limit of 20%. So therefore, presumably, if it's true by tzedakah, it makes sense that it should be true by mitzvahs also. That's how they understand the Ramah to be saying. So the Ramah also emphasizes that you might think that maybe if a mitzvah is passing, if a mitzvah overes, it's not going to be around forever, then maybe this shouldn't be true. There's no, even mitzvah overes, this is the case. There are some opinions in Rishonim, the Bala Iter is quoted as saying you have to go to the ends of the earth, you have to spend everything you have on getting a lulav and an esrog, a mitzvah overes, maybe all mitzvahs, so that seems to be in opposition to this Ramah. Also Rabbeinu Bachaya, his commentary on Chumash seems to say you have to spend everything, but for the most part this view of the Ramah has become very dominant. And perhaps it's also true about the second half of his sentence, that he says that this is not the case if it is a low sase. That a positive mitzvah you have to spend only up to a fifth, but if it's a negative mitzvah, then you have to give kol hon beso. You have to be ready to give up all of your money in order not to violate a prohibition. So this has become also a very accepted principle, even though not everybody agreed. Among them, the Vilna Gaon in his commentary to Yeridei in Kuftun Zayin, so he notes that so the source for the Ramah about that is really Gemara, the ninth parak of Brachos. The Gemara Darshan's Apostolic, you have to express your Avos Hashem with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of Ma'odecha, all of your resources. So even if you have to spend all of your money, so says the Vilna Gaon, but that's talking about Avodah Zarah. That's the contrast of Avos Hashem. So for Avodah Zarah, you have to give up all your money, which seems to imply that other losaseis are not in this category. So that's the whole discussion. How do you answer that question if you assume that the Ramah is correct, which is a very popular assumption? So the Sefer Sifsei Ani doesn't totally answer the question, but he notes that when it comes to giving up your life, so you could have thought that really all the mitzvahs in the Torah are hard way out, where you have to give up your life for us, you have to give up your life for everything. So the Chiddush is no v'chai bohem, that only the big three har v'yavor. So we only have that miut as far as giving up your life, but maybe your money is still left with thinking you have to give up all of your money. The Sefer of Shalos and Shuvos HaTeres Moshe that had a distinction. I'm not 100% sure if this is the only way to see things, but he suggests that maybe the difference is that Avodah Zarah is absolute. So even if you have to give up all of your money, and you don't, you're still considered to be an Oved Avodah Zarah. But with the other Averis, the Torah, really you should give up your money to avoid violating them. But if you don't, we don't call you an Avarian. Now what that means, unclear. But that's how he suggests there's a difference between Avodah Zarah and everything else. And yet the Ramaz Din could still be correct. The Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he suggests that this is really only talking, though, to an individual. The contrast to what we said before, right, that if you have a right not to impoverish yourself, so you shouldn't be thrown onto the tzibur. So the contrast to that is, so if it's a question of alosa, say, okay, so then you have to let the tzibur take care of you. But what if it's the whole tzibur is faced with this issue? So there's not going to be anybody to take care of them because the whole tzibur is going to have to give up all their money. So the Chassam Sofer says this wouldn't apply on a communal level. It would only apply to an individual who then the tzibur can then take care of him, so that's what he has to do. In other words, again, the flip side of what we said before, that normally you're not supposed to put yourself on the public till, and in this case you would. But if the whole tzibur has to give up everything, then that wouldn't be appropriate. So this provokes a whole discussion. So when we say los ases, ases, so how are we classifying it? Do we classify it as mitzvos asay and mitzvos los asay? Or are we talking about active behavior versus passive behavior? This is a question that comes up in a couple of other areas of halacha we've probably talked about in the past. It comes up, for example, in the context of kavod abrios. The Gemara says that kavod abrios can be docha din min haTorah b'shev al tasa. So the Acharonim discussed, does that mean passive behavior, or does it mean not violating an asay? Not violating los asay, rather. Stipler and Masachah Shavuos, there's a whole discussion about that. Or another example is Yesh Koach B'dei Chachamim Lakar Davar Min HaTorah. We know that Chazal have the ability to uproot a mitzvah Min HaTorah B'Shev Al Tasa. Like we say, they can tell you not to blow shofar on Shabbos if Hashana falls out on Shabbos. But we know they can't tell us to eat dreif, they can't tell us to mechal Shabbos, they can't tell us to violate a lav. So in that context also, Rabbi Chanan and others have a whole discussion. Does that mean aseis versus los aseis? Or does it mean negative behavior versus active behavior versus passive behavior? So for the most part, those two classifications overlap, but not always. So like, for example, delaying burial. So the Torah says you shouldn't delay a funeral. Lo salin nivlaso. So that's a lav, but you violate it passively by not doing something. So would you have to give up all your money not to violate this? That's the discussion the Achronim have, basically about this issue. How do we classify things? So it's probably relevant to the issue of why do you have this distinction in the first place? Why should you say that if you normally have a 1/5 rule, that it would be different if it's a los aseh? So Lavush says that the issue is that it has to do with the chumrah of a los aseh being more severe. So that's why you have a different standard. And the Torah Tamima suggests it's an issue of heker, that it's recognizable. You could see somebody doing something wrong. So maybe that's a Chil Hashem issue, but it's worse because you can see people misbehaving, as opposed to Bitl Aseh, where you don't see anything. So that fits into the two possibilities. Lavush is talking about the severity of the issue under the assumption that Los Aseh are more severe than Aseh, so it's really all about classification. While the Torah Tamima is talking about what you can see and what you can't see, which is really all about active behavior versus passive behavior. So it's a discussion, for example, the Sefer Achinuch writes that if a person can't afford to pay his workers on time, it's going to cost him all his money, so then he's pater, even though the lav in the Torah of lo salin pu'la sachir, so apparently the lav follows the passive classification. Even though one could maybe say a different answer there, that there is a big yesod that the Achronim have, it's based on Ramban and Kiddushin, that if you have a mitzvah in the Torah that's phrased both as an asay and as a los asay, it's phrased as do this and don't not do this, so then it's clear that the los asay is coming to enhance the asay, it's really there as a backup, so then that follows the rules of an asay. So one could say here also that really it's an aseya of b'yomo titein scharo, and the los aseya of los salin pula sacher to back it up. So really it should follow the rules of an aseya. I mentioned that once to Rav Shechter, and he thought it wasn't so possible to correlate, but in theory that could probably be an approach to that sefer achinuch also. It's relevant also to Tztaka, because as Tosfos and Ksuvos points out, that Tztaka has los aseis also. Los sikbo tzasiyadcha, los ametz levavcha, you can't close your fist, you can't harden your heart. So how does that fit in? So it could be that why Tztaka also follows the rules of an asei, because there the los aseis are clearly there to defend the aseis. And that's example of Maritz Chayis in his commentary to Sukkah. He asked the question, the Gemara in Bava Kama seems to say that the rule of Osik b'mitzvah patam and a mitzvah applies to Staka. So he says, I don't understand. Osik b'mitzvah patam and a mitzvah clearly only applies to positive mitzvah. So if a person's involved in a mitzvah, we don't say he can eat treif, he can be machal Shabbos because Osik b'mitzvah. So it's clear it only patas you from positive mitzvahs. So how can pat you from Staka if there are los assays? So they say the same story, that the los assays are there to enhance the assay, so we treat it like an assay. That's it's clearly a mitzvah assay. So that could be relevant here as well. This whole assumption that the los assays are more chomer, which is a very supportable assumption, because normally we assume that severity can be discerned from punishment. So an iser misa is more severe than an iser malchus, which makes sense. So if that's true, then it makes sense to say that pretty much all the los assays are more severe than all the assays which don't have punishments. So the question is, how does that match with the idea, for example, of assay docha los assay? The idea that a mitzvah assay should push off a los assay. And the Ramban in his commentary to Chumash, he says that that's because it's a clash between avos Hashem and yiras Hashem. That you do mitzvos positively, that's an expression of avos Hashem. And you abstain from averus, that's an expression of yiras Hashem. So when it's a clash between the two, Avos Hashem is more impressive than Yiras Hashem. So that seems to say that Aseis are more important. So there's a sefer called Sha'ol Sha'ol. I think it's written by the son of the Chalkas Yaakov, Sha'ol Breish. So he explains that these ideas work together. But essentially what the Ramban was saying is that to accomplish an Asei is more impressive than to abstain from a Los Asei. So it fits, because when it comes to punishment, so we're saying, since it's more impressive to accomplish an assay than to not violate a los assay, so if you fail to perform an assay, that's not so bad that we have to punish it. But if you're so bad that you even fail to abstain from a los assay, so then that's a lower level, that's why it gets punished. So essentially, the least impressive behavior gets punished, and the most impressive behavior is the one that we glorify. So it all goes into one continuum, but it still upholds this idea that the los assays are essentially more severe. So then there could be possibly some exceptions. The Sefer Marcheshes has a question where he considers the issue, what if somebody said, let's say somebody has a bris, he has a baby, is born on Shabbos, so the bris is going to be on Shabbos. But you tell the mole he's got to come to your house on Shabbos, he's going to charge you an arm or a leg, the other arm, the other leg, going to charge everything you have. So it's going to cost kol hon beis to have the bris on the eighth day. But if you let him come on Sunday where he can drive for a half hour, he'll do it for free. He'll do it for a lot less. So do you have to give up everything in order to do the bris on Shabbos? So presumably the bris is a mitzvah saseh. But there is a svara to say that since the Torah gives a punishment for not doing a bris, it's a punishment of karis, so maybe it's treated like a los assay. So that all depends on why are los assays treated like los assays. If they're treated like that because of the severity, as indicated by the punishment, so then maybe a bris is a cork, maybe it's treated like a los assay. But if it's all about negative behavior, about not doing things that are wrong, so then a bris is still categorized as an assay, even though it has that issue connected to it. The flip side of this, yes, sir.
You put up the bris one day, your chi of karis?
So the whole machlokas we're showing the Rambam and the Raivid, what the chi of karis is. So the Rambam seems to understand that in order to be chi of karis, you have to die without a meal. But it sounds like from the Raivid that any past the first day, every minute that you go, it's an isser karis, whatever that means. Presumably it gets wiped away once you actually do it, but you know, whatever that means, it's an isser karis. That was the topic of a big fight about the Dvar Avram had with everybody else about he said you should prioritize the Mila Shalov Bismana over a Mila Bismana because the clock is ticking on the cars. Nobody agreed with that. That's the whole story. So the Marcheshes also has a discussion. This is a bigger issue, but you have to answer this more completely anyway. But when somebody comes to your door and he says he's collecting tzedakah for somebody who needs to have life-saving surgery, so why shouldn't you have to say, okay, I'll sell my house, I'll give you everything I have, because lo samar al dam reyecha is a lo sase. So you should have to give away everything in order to not violate that. So one of the approaches he mentions there is that while it's a passive lo samar, so apparently we treat it like an assay. But even that's not going to be enough an answer, because you still have to give away a fifth of your money, which is also not what people seem to do. So first of all, even though there's this lav, it's clearly all an outgrowth of stucco, so it goes back into stucco rules. But then on top of that, so there's a whole chakira that Achronim talk about, this idea of a fifth for a mitzvah. So is it per mitzvah, or is it all the mitzvahs that cost money you add up into one thing? So it makes sense to say, the Knesset Avraham talks about this also, it makes sense to say that it's a whole total. Because otherwise, the concern about impoverishment you could still have if you have two expensive mitzvahs, and that's 19% each, you know, it clearly undermine the whole issue of not impoverishing yourself. And also because it's presumably comparable to tzedakah. So when it comes to tzedakah, if we say there's a limit, it means we're taking into account all the tzedakah that you're giving, adding it together. So presumably it's true for the mitzvahs, all goes into the same pile. There's a 20% upper limit for everything brought together. So then the fact is there are a lot of tzedakahs, there are a lot of people who are going to be needing surgeries. So presumably that all goes into the pot of this limit that's all there together. There's also a discussion that the Achronim have, the Bukuryankov, Rebecca Ballinger, and others. What about Dinim Durabanan? So let's say a person wants to violate a lav Durabanan. Do we say that's treated like a lav? Or any drabbanan maybe should be treated like a lav because of los osir. It's machlok the Rambam and the Ramban as to whether the pasuk of los osir comes to prohibit or comes to obligate adherence to all mitzvahs drabbanan. So should we say that's the case? We should treat it like a los osir, or do we say that no, we should treat it like less than an asay or like an asay? So some note there's a Tosus in Sanhedrin and Daf Chavav where the Gemara there talks about that there was a tax that was imposed in Eretz Yisrael that the Rabbanan at that time allowed certain kulas in the Shemitah year working the land in order to deal with this tax. So Tosfos says, how could they do that? How could you violate Shemitah in order to deal with the monetary pressure? So the first answer Tosfos gives is this, because nowadays Shemitah b'zmanazeh is the Rabbanan. And the second answer Tosfos gives is it was so oppressive, essentially, it was a pikuach nefesh situation. So some of the svarim point out, maybe those two answers reflect this issue, that either you hold it has to be mamash pikuach nefesh to allow you to violate a lav, or no, that if it was a drabbanan, that's enough, that we wouldn't assume this din would apply b'makom drabbanan. So there's a back and forth about this, but the Maris Chayis and his Chiddush in Tuchulin, he notes it's a very compelling point, that we often find within rabbinic laws in general that b'makom hefsid lo gazru, that the rabbis inherently built in leniencies to dinim d'rabbanan b'makom hefsid. So it doesn't make sense to say that not violated dinim d'rabbanan, you should have to give up all of your money. Presumably, at most, it has a din of chomesh for the most part. There's an interesting suffix in the Tshuvas Mariel Diskin, where he asks, let's say you have a situation, like I mentioned before, asay doch halos asay. So that usually only applies if you can't fulfill both. If there's a irreconcilable conflict between the essay and the los essay, then the essay wins. But what if you can fulfill the los essay, but you'd have to give up all your money in order to do it? So do we say that you don't have to give up all your money because let the essay be doch of the los essay? Or do we say that no, you have to give up all your money to not violate the los essay, and therefore you should keep both the essay and the los essay? He doesn't really have an answer. It's such an interesting suffix in light of all this. So in terms of Inyana Dioma, so we're approaching Hanukkah. We already now have Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch both write that when it comes to Neres Chanukah, a person has to do whatever it takes to light Neres Chanukah. He has to be shol al psachim, mefer his ksuso, he has to knock on doors and beg, he has to sell his clothes, he has to do whatever he can in order to fulfill the obligation of Neres Chanukah. So everybody asks, I understand, if it's tefillin, it's dimin haTorah or something like that, it's going to cost more than a fifth of his money, he's not obligated to do it. But Chanukah is a din d'rabbanan. You have to give up all of your, you have to go begging. So they explain, well, as a Tosfos and Psachim, as a Mishnah in Psachim essentially says that this is true for Dalai Kosos. The Mishnah says, afilu oni halokeach min atamchoy, even a poor person who has to take from welfare shouldn't have less than four cups of wine on Pesach. So you see from there that mitzvah of persumei nisa, you have to give up, you have to go to the ends of the earth in order to fulfill. So Chanukah, Megillah, Talikosos, these are all persumei nisas. You have to do whatever it takes. That doesn't really answer the question. It just reclassifies the question, because these mitzvahs are all still, at the end of the day, mitzvahs d'rabbanan. So why do I have to go to such lengths for a mitzvah d'rabbanan? I don't have to do it for a mitzvah min haTorah. So the different approaches are suggested. Rav Shechter likes quoting from Rav Soloveitchik that the idea of persumei nisa, why do we have to be mefarsim and nes to begin with? What's the point? So the idea of persumei nisa is really, it's a kind of tefillah that we're saying that God did miracles for us in the past, so we want He should continue to do miracles for us in the future. So it doesn't make sense. It's kind of incongruous if we're going to say we want God to go outside of His budget, so to speak. And to make that point, we have allotted exactly 19.9% of our resources. And we have to also go out of our budget if we want the Kodesh Baruch Hu to go above and beyond. He normally runs the world up Derech HaTeva, and now we're asking him to go outside of that system. So we have to be ready also to go to greater lengths. The Avnei Nezer has a different approach. The Avnei Nezer in his Tshuvas, he explains that the idea of not spending more than a fifth of your money, this is a principle of onus, essentially. We say, onus rachmana patre, that if you're not able to afford a mitzvah, so if you're not able to perform a mitzvah because you're stopped by something, it's simply not possible, so you're pater. So apparently, more than a fifth of your money means you can't afford it, means you're pater, means you don't have to do it. So that's true, this rule, onus rachmana patre, so that works for tefillin, that works for a mitzvah between you and God, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that you wanted to do it and you weren't able to do it. Okay, so it gives you credit as if you did it. But a mitzvah that involves another person, so they can't credit you if they need something and you can't give it. So they can't credit your intention. Only God can credit your intention, but a human being can't do that. So the whole principle of onus doesn't really work for mitzvahs ben adam l'chaverim. So persumei nisa, in this understanding, is essentially a ben adam l'chaverim. It's about communicating. You have to communicate the miracle to other people. So how's it going to work? So you can't afford a menorah, so you won't put one in your window. So people will walk past the window and they'll say, well, there's no menorah in the window, but probably he wanted to put a menorah, he couldn't afford it, so I'll tell myself about the miracle. It's not going to work, he's not going to know about it. So essentially, if it's about communication, it has to actually happen, and therefore we have to go to a greater effort to make sure that we're actually able to fulfill the mitzvah. That's how the Avnei Nezer understood. So maybe that's why this should be an exception. This is all normally this time of Azveh, everything we're talking about till now is essentially a detail of Onus Rachmana Patre, Chazal giving a specific context to the Onus Rachmana Patre, and maybe that doesn't work for Ben Adam Lechaveros, doesn't work for Persumanises that are within that category. A lot more to say about this, so I will just mention that there are some cases where it doesn't seem to apply. For example, the Gemara talks about pidgin aben. The Gemara in Kedushin has a suffix. Let's say you yourself are a bechor and you never had a pidgin aben, and now you're old enough you have your own bechor. So the Gemara talks about a person who only has five sloim, and it says, who liftos, who beno liftos? He has to worry about himself and his son, who comes first? So what do you mean? Either way, if a guy's giving up everything for this, it seems like it's more than a chomesh. He shouldn't be obligated. So some of the Achronim explain that this is all about spending money on mitzvos. But if the mitzvah itself is to spend money, then it's not subject to this exclusion. It's only when you have to buy something or you have to spend money in order to do a mitzvah, so then you have this story. But if the mitzvah itself is about spending money, it's not subject to that. That's why some achronim have a chiddush along similar lines, that they say that anything that's the normal cost, if a like, normal cost of an esrog is more than a fifth, you would still have to spend it. It's only when you have some type of situation where you're required to go beyond the normal cost, then there's these limits. But this idea that if the mitzvah is about paying money, it doesn't apply. It's also part of the explanation why we don't say, example, a person has a debt. So, okay, so paying off a debt is a mitzvah, piron balchov mitzvah. So you say, okay, so I only have to pay a fifth. So that's not the assumption. The assumption is you have to pay whatever you own, and that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to pay the money. It's not subject to this limitation of a fifth. The Chafetz Chaim in the Sefer Avos Chesed, so he lists like 5-6 exceptions to this whole idea. Latest forum talk about these. There are different types of exceptions. Among the exceptions, for example, a person who's an Asher Muflug, if a person is very wealthy, so he's a billionaire, so he could give away 95% of his money, he's still going to be much richer than everybody else. So clearly it doesn't apply to him. We're not going to tell such a person, a person who's got $5 billion, he's obligated to keep $4 billion of it because we're afraid Shema Yoni V'Sarach L'Brias. So we don't say that. We're talking about the person of average income. And normally somehow we figured out that whatever that number is in a given society, that whoever's making the average normal income can't afford to dip more than 20% in without seriously compromising their ability to support themselves. But if they can, that's a different story. Others say that there are other types of exceptions. Some say Hachzakas Talmud Torah is an exception. In yeshivas, this is a very popular exception. Others say, you know, if you're giving tzedakah tshuva of some sort, so you're kind of saving your life, then it might be also an exception. Some say Kaimi Aniyim is an exception. If the Aniyim are there asking, that's a little hard to believe because that would really be almost every scenario, so then the whole din would kind of be negated. Others also note that if you're in general, a wasteful person, you're squandering money on everything. So if you're going to spend the money on luxuries, then for sure you could spend it on tzedakah too, which is really the flip side of the whole rich point, that the point is that money that's going to be spent on your basic necessities in life or your living, so then that's got a 20% limit. Money that, in any event, doesn't need to go for that, either because you're too rich or because you'd spend it on other things anyway. So then, for sure, that money can be devoted to tzedakah. So those are some of the handful of exceptions that are talked about. A lot more to talk about this, but it's late, so we'll just end there. Just to quickly chazer what we spoke about. So we talked about the fact that there is this din, which sounds like a din de Rabbanan, that they established in Lusha that you should only give a maximum of 50 money to tzedakah, but the Gemara does connect it to the pasuk that's with Parsha. We talked about whether that was an older din that was reinstituted later, whether the opposite, that Minat Torah would have to give away everything, and Chazal then came and limited it, as the Chacham Sofer suggested, and Rav Osner questioned whether that could be the case or not, and then we discussed the Ramaz extrapolating from here to all of mitzvos, and emphasizing also mitzvah Overes. We talked about some Rishonim might argue, and also him saying that it's not true for Alosa, say, we talked about how the Vilna Gaon may argue on that, we talked about different rayas back and forth about how to understand the Gemara that seems to be saying only for Avodah Zarah you're obligated to give up your life. And then we talked about how you classify active or passive asays, los asays for this purpose, just like we find in a few other areas of halacha, how it seems to correlate with why there is a distinction, the Levush's idea of chumra or the Tartuma's idea of hacker. We talked about, for example, the question of why the Sefer Achinuch says you don't have to spend all your money to pay your workers. Talked about different theories in terms of that. And we talked about how this stems with the idea that I say do chalosa say normally because the Ramban saying that I say is Avos Hashem, which trumps Yiras Hashem. And we talked about how you could possibly reconcile those ideas. And then we talked also about the Marcheshes Safik about pushing off a bris to save money, and the Marcheshes' other Safik about why you don't have to give all your money to somebody who needs an operation that's life-saving. In that context, we talked also about whether this is about permits for collecting all the mitzvahs together, which is perhaps more likely. We talked about whether this applies to Dinam Durabanan, about the 2 days in Tosus and Sanhedrin, about the Shemitah, and the Maratz Chayes' comment about the Makom Hefzid. And we talked also about Aser Dochalos Asay and the Maral Diskin. If you have an Aser Dochalos Asay, but you can get out of Los Asay if you spend all your money, how does that fit in here? And then we talked about the fact that when it comes to Persumin Issa, this doesn't seem to apply based on the Mishnah of Sachem and the Rambam Shulchan Aruch saying you have to spend everything, you have to go to great efforts at least to light Chanukah candles. And we talked about two approaches to that, either because it's a type of tefillah that we want God to go above and beyond, so we should go above and beyond, or like the Avnei Nezer's idea that it's about communicating with somebody, connecting with a person that you have to actually do. You can't rely on Onus Rachmana Patre, which is apparently the way that all of this exemption exclusion of 20% or more normally works. And we talked about how some mitzvahs don't seem to have this boundary. We talked about Pidgin HaBen and paying back debts, and we mentioned the idea that if the mitzvah itself is spending money, then presumably it doesn't have this whole rule. It's only about when you have to spend money in order to do a mitzvah, and how some suggested that even in that case the value of the mitzvah is not subject to limitation. It's only things that are above and beyond the basic price of the mitzvah. And then we talked about the fact that the Chofetz Chaim and others record certain broad exceptions. For example, in Asher Muflog, if somebody is so wealthy that he could easily give away much higher percentages and not feel it, then he's certainly not subject to this restriction. And other possible suggestions, such as Hachzakas Talmud Torah, personal tshuva, things like that, Kamianim, different ideas that have been suggested along those lines. And we mentioned the idea that some have that if you're going to waste the money anyway, then for sure you can give it to tzedakah. And that's the flip side of the wealthy idea, that any money that's not needed for your basic living and responsible savings is it can presumably be diverted to tzedakah before any other types of usages. Okay, so we will stop there. You, So maybe next week we'll talk about